Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management archaeology and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 248 for September 7th, 2022. I'm your host, Chris Webster. On today's show, we talk about field vehicles. So start thinking about your dream blank check field vehicle because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the show, everyone. Joining me today is, in alphabetical order, Andrew in California.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Bill in California.
Good morning.
Doug in Scotland.
Hey, everyone.
And Heather in California.
Hi, everyone.
All right. And I am almost to Reno. We're actually at Rye Patch Dam State Recreation Area, which we stayed here before, but we didn't have Starlink. And so we were totally like disconnected because it's like literally drops down into this little canyon and just like no cell service down here whatsoever, no Wi-Fi, no anything. But, you know, today we're living the good life and recording a podcast while seeing deer out my window and just got done watching Formula One. So pretty good. And it's quiet, it's peaceful, and we can do whatever we want. So it's the new era of technology. Speaking of, let's talk about trucks and new trucks, because I tell you what, I got a lot to say on the topic of vehicles, which is Andrew's baby today. So, Andrew, why don't you bring us in with your ideas on vehicles?
Sure. I thought we'd talk about vehicles in general, and we can go trucks and cars and SUVs and all that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. I am a not so secret gearhead, so I have this need to know this stuff. I can't help myself. It's a disease. And so, you know, over the years, I think we all as archaeologists have had varying experiences with different vehicles. Some turned out to work really well. Some turned to work really terrible. And, you know, are there themes that we've learned in terms of new cars or used cars? You know, what mm-hmm. we find works really well for us as a CRM professional? You know, you're driving maybe a long way to the job. Maybe you're in some terrain that isn't the best at the job, you know, and just the upkeep of the car, the truck, the overall expense. There's a lot there to talk about. So I thought we would, you know, we can just open it up with all kinds of topics there. I have a bunch, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of type of vehicle too, right? It all depends on mm-hmm. where you're at and what you're doing. But for the most part, I would say a lot of our experiences with archaeology are in areas where that are undeveloped just by nature. Like, it's CRM archaeology, so you're usually in areas that are undeveloped. Now, there obviously are situations where you're in an urban environment, you're doing archaeology, and like, you know, I know somebody who did an excavation not too long ago in New York City because a lot of stuff was put up before laws and regulations said you had to, you know, monitor and do things in yeah. some of these big cities. So now they're having to go back and do these things when a redevelopment happens, a building comes down, or potentially you're doing monitoring. I know, like, you know, Heather, down in Southern California, you probably do a lot of monitoring in very urban environments where you could just drive a sedan to the project, right? It doesn't act. You could yeah. probably Uber to the project. But,
you know, we've had that happen, actually.
I have no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I've taken transit to the project before, too. It saves on parking.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So you when you're putting your screen and your shovel on the bus, it's just a real bitch, but it's possible. Maybe you could put it on the bike rack. I don't know. Mm-hmm. All right. So what do you think, Andrew?
Well, I was just thinking in general, because even like I have students who ask me this kind of stuff, you know, which I have for the field. And the short answer is basically used is beautiful. I would say do not buy a new car for the field because it's just mm-hmm. going to get messed up. You know, it's just going to get nasty. It's just going to get scratched. I would say something around the 15-year age range is what I like because it's bottomed out in terms of its overall cost. You do not need something that's like super off-road hardcore. Like, that's usually just silly and not worth it. In my experience, a base model of something is the best with not all the add-ons, because those just break. The best gas mileage you can get. So it's always about the smaller engine, not the big engine that takes all the gas, you know. And when buying used, how the previous owner treated it. If it was me and I had to buy a used car of some kind right now, then I'd get like something older, like a Nissan Xterra that's not around anymore. But those, they're sort of second stringers. People kind of don't know them, so keep the cost down. A Subaru Forester, an older one, something American that's older of those years, as long as you can get decent gas mileage. When in doubt, the Japanese stuff is usually the best. The Toyota 4Runner is like kind of the gold standard, but they're so overpriced these days, I actually wouldn't buy one. So that's where I'm coming from. You know, you want a basic car that's used that is cheap as you can buy it.
I got a question. Do you think a car that old, though, is just going to be like buying someone else's problems? I don't know. I mean, my whole life I had junkers until recently. So,
right.
I know the lifestyle of constantly having to deal with broken stuff and fixing things and all that stuff. Do you think that buying something that old, though, 15 years old, is just going to fall apart?
Not necessarily. I think Bill brings up an excellent question. That depends on the previous owner, right? What's great for us is there's the SUV craze of like 15 years ago or so, where everyone bought them and then they just drove to the mall. You know, if you can find one that's been well maintained of that age range, I think it's still a pretty good deal, you know, especially if you know what you're looking for. But Bill does bring up a important point. Unless you're a total car guy like me, it's better to go 10 years old than 20 years old, if that makes sense.
So, Andrew, you know, I have a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old. And just knowing at this age, you know, people that are entering the field, they're younger, may not have had parents walk them down the road as far as what it takes to buy a car. What are you looking at? Yeah. How do you know that car has been maintained properly? So maybe I think you're the gearhead. I would say just for me, but I'm sure it could go a little bit, you know, much further than that, is, you know, when you're talking to somebody about buying a car, asking for their maintenance log, asking for proof that they have maintained, if they have done it at a, you know, like at a dealer, whatever, do they have proof of that?
Yeah.
My personal was, if you can ever buy from a fireman, that's like the best, or fire person, because they really take very good care of their vehicles. But that's, you know, like a, you know, unicorn or whatever. But I think maybe you could go down and talk a little bit about, how do you know that the car has been maintained?
Sure. I think it's a great question. So first off, when you first get there to look at it, how does it look? Does it look bad? If it looks bad, it's bad. You know, and it's, you'll have this little voice in your head, even if you want it. So you're going to find something online. You'll be like, yeah, I'd love a Jeep Wrangler, which are terrible, by the way. But you go and see it and you're like, I want it. But it looks horrible. Let it go. Right. There will be another one. You'll see some deal that's too good to be true. It's too good to be true. Let it go.
Don't fall in love with an idea of a certain kind of vehicle or a vehicle you see online. Yeah.
It's so true. That's almost the number one thing I'd say to people, because we have this idea in our mind in archaeology that we need the hardcore 4x4, you know, but like, you don't. I've seen people do amazing things off road with a Honda Accord. You know,
I had a Toyota Echo. It took me, you would not believe where it took me. I had a couple bumpers that fell off in the field. But you know what? There was always somebody in there that could put it back on for me.
Right.
And eventually I learned how to do it myself. That Toyota Echo was amazing.
Exactly. And it started in the morning because it was a Toyota, you know, like, and again, looking for, you know, what to buy besides the old, how it looks, like you said, do they have records? Do they understand cars? Do they know cars? You know, is one of the owners in the family, you know, they got oil changes every 3,000 miles or whatever. Can they talk about that? If they have no idea about cars, that's a bad sign. You want a knowledgeable person, I would say, first and foremost. And anyway, I think, Doug, you have something.
Yeah, actually, it's going to be like a scattergun, because there's a couple of comments. One was just like, it goes back to the whole, like, if you've kept the car maintained, but also another thing to think about is the weather of where the car was. This is going to pretty much only affect people on the coast, but yes. Salt water.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Salt water is going to rust your vehicle pretty quickly or being near it. So like it's just one of those things.
Doug? Yeah, that actually applies in places with snow too, because you have yes. salt. So it actually will eat up in the Midwest. I'm from yeah. Chicago. Mm-hmm. You can tell a car that's from the Midwest even quicker than the salt that it's exposed to on the coast, because
definitely.
They put salt on the road. So it's actually even worse. But it's actually a really good point. The salt will eat up the bottom
yeah,
of the car.
I'm actually just yes, thinking yeah. about people I know in North Dakota and stuff where it eats that as well. Yeah, I was actually just thinking UK mm-hmm. where we don't actually get that much snow, so they don't salt that often. But if you're near the coast, your car is going to, even if it looks good and it's been cared for and has like 20,000 miles after like 10 years or something like that, always check the sort of weather stuff, because that corrosion you're not going to be able to see easily.
But Heather's right. But you can see the corrosion. You just got to get down and look at the car. Right. Yeah. So rust is the great enemy. Rust is the number one thing you don't want. The number one thing. If it's rusty, mm-hmm. walk away. But like Heather was saying, you have to get down on your knees, look under the car, spend some time. So many people won't even do that. You know, you're about to drop thousands of dollars on this. Go underneath the car and look up. Bring a flashlight. That's another thing. At least most of our phones now have flashlights on them, which is great. Look under the car. Mm-hmm. If it looks all rusty, that's bad.
Don't be shy about it. Like, don't think you're hurting the guy's feelings or the person's feelings. Or bring somebody who does know cars with you. If you don't
another
know
great one. Yeah. Or, I've done that for friends before.
Another thing, too, that I've watched for especially things like SUVs and trucks is modifications and stuff. Because it's one thing if they have, like, a new stereo or something like that in there, but if they've put a lift kit and a whole bunch of other stuff, I mean, that's like aftermarket parts that you don't know the warranty on that, and they're not covered by the manufacturer. So sometimes when stuff breaks on a car that was original parts, even if it's a long time later, you might be able to get it replaced because, you know, it was faulty or something like that. And so you can get it replaced, you know, at cost or free or something like mm-hmm. that. But if somebody's, you know, put a lift kit and a whole bunch of other elaborate stuff and winches and all kinds of other stuff, like a couple things. First of all, they could have done it themselves. And like, think about the people you know, and then think about how many people you know that are competent enough to put parts on a car and have it not fall apart. And then second of all, they could have had it done at a place professionally, but now none of that stuff's covered by warranty. And it's also not, you know, it wasn't put on by the manufacturer, so the parts aren't all the same. And if something breaks, you might end up having to fix that yourself.
Yes. Great point. You know, stock is your friend. Stock is your friend. Yeah. You don't want that extra crap. It's always bad. I don't think I've ever had an experience where I'm like, thank God they put these wheels on this, you know?
Right. Right. You know, the other thing too, Andrew, you mentioned if the car looks bad, like that's a, mm-hmm. then it's probably is bad. But, you know, sometimes you really have to look to see that kind of stuff. And it's like when you go get a, it's like when you go rent a car and you walk around with the rental agency and you're looking at little scrapes and dings and stuff like that. Right. You almost have to just kind of pay attention to that minutia, because if you're buying from a dealership, they're going to detail the car before they put it on the lot, right? So they're going to try to wipe away all that evidence of bad behavior. If you're buying from a person off of Craigslist or eBay Motors or something like that, they may not have had the car detailed. So I feel like, I mean, personally, I feel like when you look at somebody's car, it's like looking at their desk at work, right? If the desk is messy, I feel like they're probably not a super great project manager. That's not always true. It's not always true. Right. But I just feel like that's true to me. Yeah. He's taking personal offense to that.
Yeah. If it's an archaeology place and there's actual artifacts on the desk and there's dirt, then that might mean they're actually a real archaeologist.
It might be. But here's the thing, though. Like, I was, you never can tell even with the cost of the car. I was looking at, and sometimes I just do this, like it's my evening pastime. I was looking at this RV on RV Trader last night, a $280,000 diesel pusher. Nice RV, 2019. This thing is beautiful, but there was 164 pictures. And I started looking through these things. And I'll tell you what, the scrapes and stuff I saw on the doors and the sides and on the bumpers that the dealership definitely took pictures of on purpose. I'm like, I've had my RV for over 2 years. I've never hit anything. How do you hit something when you're driving at a half a mile per hour through a park? And it's just like, you know, who knows what other kind of care this person took? And when you're talking about all those systems, that's one thing. With a car, it's a little different, but you just look at the little stuff. Look underneath that skid plate. How does the skid plate look underneath in the front, the air dam? You know, like if that thing's all jacked up, what else did they do to it? You know what I mean? They're taking speed bumps at full speed.
Yes, totally. When you're looking at like used car dealerships, it's open warfare. You know, it's you against them. And that's all it is. They are lying to you. Always know that everything's a lie. You know,
and I looked at a car one time and it had a small drip of just like an occasional drip underneath it of oil. And I could see this tiny little puddle. I don't know how long it'd been parked in that spot, but it's at a dealership. It was a little older car. I think it was I can't even remember what kind of car it was. And the guy was like, oh, well, this is a car. It had like 100,000 miles on it. I wasn't even looking at it seriously. I was just curious because it looked interesting. And it had so many miles on it. He's like, oh, when it gets this many miles on it, like that's just natural. Like it's just going to have a little bit of an oil leak. And I was like, no, that's bad. Like it shouldn't have an oil leak.
Oh, that's natural. No, it's not. Yeah. There's seals for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something's failing.
I just saw in the comments, Heather, as we're talking, you know, looking up if the vehicle's been in an accident. Yeah. The Carfax, there's Carfax on so many vehicles right now. You want to look at that and it'll say like, accidents been reported, you know?
And so how does that happen? I mean, that happens just so for those that don't know, if you've been in it, it doesn't mean it covers every accident.
No.
I mean, if somebody didn't report it to insurance and they just fixed it on their own, that would not be triggered. You know, the DMV wouldn't know about it.
Right,
right.
Those records are pulled from the DMV. So that's definitely another thing you want to know.
And ask them, you know, again, when you're going to the seller, it's like, oh, I see that this has been an accident. What happened? How was it fixed? Where is it? Where was the accident? You know? Yeah, absolutely. And again, like
trust
you said before.
Verify.
Yeah, like you said before, Heather, like that they may act like, oh, I can't believe you've hurt my feelings asking me that. So what? You know, tell me about your car. Again. Yeah,
they're not going to care about your feelings when you break down on the side of the road because they didn't tell you everything.
Totally. So.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's take a break and come back on the other side. And I want to talk about actual vehicles that you could choose. We've talked about a lot of the criteria for choosing a vehicle and what you should look for. But now we need to talk about, well, what kind of vehicle do you think you need? And maybe offer up some options. So let's do that on the other side of the break.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome back to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 248. And we're talking about cars, vehicles, and stuff like that. Before we get into some actual vehicles, Doug had a point on financing, which we all need to think about.
Yeah, it was one of my couple of random points. And one is, like, if at all possible, do not go with dealer financing. I mean, we're talking used cars here, so you might be able to afford it, just, you know, have, you know, maybe $5,000 or something, or 10, or it depends on your budget. But absolutely do not go with like dealer finance. I mean, this was, well, now like 15 years ago, but it was like 2005, 6, one of my coworkers, she went in to get a used car. And I think the value was maybe like 10,000. It was a pretty new car. But like when she signed the papers and did the financing, she was going to end up spending like $30,000. Imagine like $30,000 on a vehicle, a used vehicle, 15, 17 years ago. It was insane. I mean, that'd be like the equivalent of like almost like a spending like $50,000 now. But it's, you have to look at those terms and stuff. And usually most dealer financing is the worst possible thing you can do. Go to banks, go to other specific like car financing
organizations. Credit unions are really good for that.
Credit unions. All sorts of just, I think my number one advice would be never get dealer financing, because by the time you actually like pay it off, it'll be two or three times what you would have paid if you just like paid cash or you know, just gone to your credit union or anything like that. I don't know if you guys have other experiences with that, but it was horrendous. I think we eventually got, because it was quick enough and we caught it, that she was able to return the vehicle. But if she'd waited like another week or two, by the law of the state, she basically would have had to pay three times what the car was worth. And it was horrendous.
I would say that when you're going in and you're negotiating, don't tell them right off the bat. Don't tell them that, because they're going to give you different prices. So hold some information close to the vest. Don't tell them that that's what your intent is. Get their bottom price, really, you know, haggle. And then you can spring on the fact that I've got my own financing.
Yeah. And this, you know, this is a huge thing too, Heather. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad Doug brought this up too. Cause like buying a car is not like buying pretty much anything else in our society. I mean, it's not even like haggling at a market, you know, when you're in a tourist city or something like that. It's something totally different, because if you have an old car, you're haggling for the trade-in value. If you are buying the car, you're haggling for the value on the car you're trying to buy. And then you're also haggling on the finance. And all those things are going through three different channels, right? The salesperson, that's the one person who's like, you know, kind of like the apprentice or whatever, that's trying to sell you the car. And so their motivation is to sell cars, because they most of the time get a commission. After that, the person who's the manager, the floor manager, is usually a higher level salesperson. And so they know the company's goals and the dealership's goals on sales and what they need to get and how much they paid for the car. And so they get a commission on all the sales that all the salespeople do. But the finance officer is the final leg, and they're usually the more further along salesperson. You know, they've made it from the management floor, and their deal is to get a deal. You know, they get deals with the bank for selling you financing. And so they want to make sure that they, you know, do the right thing for themselves. And so it's three different levels, and each person is trying to take advantage of you. And you're also trying to take advantage of the fact that they're greedy. So they want to make a sale. They don't feed themselves if they don't make a sale. And you're the one who's the sucker that they're trying to reel in. So at every single step of the way, just like Doug saying, pay attention to the financing, because once again, that finance officer, they're trying to make the money for themselves. Heather's exactly right too. Don't tell them you're going to pay for it yourself until you've haggled it down, because they will mess with the numbers. They'll change it after they find out that they're not going to get money off of you selling the loan to you. Because if you think about it, they can make up some of the money they cut off the price of the car and the money they give you for your trade-in. If they give you a whack financing deal like Doug's talking about, they can get that back, because the bank will give them a deal for, you know, gouging you and getting you a higher interest rate in these payments. So you want to negotiate your trade-in, you want to negotiate the price of that, get it all in writing, and then pull your checkbook out and say, oh, by the way, I'm just going to pay cash for this right now, which means you took a loan out from your bank or secured your own money. At that point, they might scramble, they might try to backtrack, but then, of course, they know that that can happen at any step. So don't feel sorry for them if they're all of a sudden staggering and like, you know, going around and trying to put on, you know, extra, you know, repair plans and this and that, and sneak little things in at the last minute that they didn't say anything about. So you got to pay attention. Like this is, if done well, it's a multi-day saga.
Right.
It's multiple days of fighting back and forth. It's talking on the phone. It's going back to, it's standing up and walking out. It's going back in. It's all performative. Yeah. And yep. It's pretty stressful, and there's no joy at all in it. But at the end, you get a car.
Very quick point, because I know that we do actually need to talk about vehicles and the type of vehicles here. But the best experience I ever had with purchasing a vehicle, my husband's the one who actually did the majority of the beginning work, or actually did all of it. And that is, you can do a lot of this negotiation online. do it before you even walk into the dealership, because they're still trying to make sure that you walk into the dealership. So if you can get all those details done ahead of time, so you basically just walk in and seal the deal, that's the best way to do it, because they prey on the fact that you're in there and that they're going to make you feel guilty for leaving and that they're going to pressure you. But if you do it online, they still don't have you on their hook yet. And so I think that was genius on my husband's part, and it really did work well. We got a very good deal because of it.
Yeah, they're not doing that anymore, Heather, because of you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm trying to do it now. I'm trying to do it right now for an EV, and they're not doing that anymore. They don't give you numbers anymore over the internet. They won't give them to you on the phone either. Really? They want you to come in and report to service.
Yeah, I mean, it's
interesting.
It's been a bit weird the last couple of years with like used cars and stuff. But there, I had 2 points. One is like Heather's point was huge on don't tell them you have financing, because, okay, so this doesn't cover like every business model in cars, but essentially most dealers, they don't make any money selling cars. They make all their money on the finance. So they would be more willing to cut 500 off or 1,000 or whatever off the price of the vehicle, because it, to them, it doesn't actually matter that much. In almost every sense, all the money you make, they make off of cars, is made off of financing. Actually, like, it's weird. Like, car dealerships are actually banks that kind of give you a car as like a tote bag or something, as like a gift, as part of the process for a loan. That's like how they all work. And again, the last couple of years have been weird, but I think we haven't mentioned this, but the reason you should always buy used is because cars in general, okay, the last year was weird where you could actually resell your car for the value you bought it at. But usually, as soon as you drive it off the lot, you've lost a quarter to like half or a third of the value of the vehicle. Like, as soon as you go beyond like that 12 miles that are there from it driving around from like test drives and whatever, as soon as you drive it off the lot, it's one of the only assets that essentially instantly loses so much. Like, you know, if you just spent 30 or 40,000, you've instantly, the moment you've bought it, you've actually bought something that's $10,000 less than what you paid for it. It's a really weird thing.
I would never think of a car as an asset. Like, it's not. It's not an asset. It's a tool. So
yeah, but even if you go and buy like a power tool, you're not losing a third of its value as soon as you're taking it out of Kmart or Target or you know, wherever store you've bought it from. Usually, if it's brand new, you can go on eBay and sell it for pretty close to what you bought it for. Whereas a car, if you buy it new, you've pretty much lost a third of the value
you'll
maybe ever get out of it.
Why I almost never buy new if I can possibly help it. Okay. But I guess we want to talk about actual cars.
Well, hold on.
Yes.
Hold on. I got a point on that, because it's always been kind of a sticking point for me. Yeah. I've been regarding buying brand new cars, right? I bought a couple of brand new cars, right? And most of us, I would say, most of the people listening to this are probably the kind of people that are going to probably run a car into the ground, I would assume, right?
Right.
So, you know, and I've done that, except for my Tacoma. I only got rid of that because, I mean, I had to still have that damn thing, but I had to get rid of it because I couldn't tow it behind the RV. So sold it for a pretty good price, though, even with like 115,000 miles on it, because, you know, holds its value. So there's one thing there. Buy a car that has a good resale market, and then it won't lose as much value. But looking at the idea of a car losing half its value or a third of its value when you drive it off the lot, yes, okay, that's true. But you still just drove a brand new freaking car off the lot that doesn't have anyone else's problems, has a dealer warranty, probably has free maintenance for the next 3 years, and has all those things. And if you keep it for at least 3-4 years, like you're probably going to do, then it's going to be down to the value you're going to sell it at anyway. So who cares if it loses that value, unless you plan on selling it within 6 months of buying it?
That's a
dumb idea. But if you plan on keeping it for a little while, who cares if it loses that value? You get all the benefits of a brand new car that nobody's had a chance to mess up.
Right.
So factor that in.
I think that's extremely fair.
I'm a fan of the one-year-old.
Right.
One-year-old car.
Yeah.
I know people who do that too. Yeah. And that's a great deal too. No. Chris, you bring up an excellent point, though. There is something we said for new cars, obviously. You know, it is nice. Mm-hmm. Again, it starts every time. Everything's new. The only problems with it are your own that you've created. You know, it is awesome to have that. And it is true that, yes, if it loses its value off the lot, it's okay a couple years in, you know. But but for archaeology, man, if I'm a CRM archaeologist for a car, I'm not buying new, you know.
I hear you. But again, it depends on the vehicle, right? Because we're going to talk about cars. That's why I bought my Tacoma. I got this huge project that my company never does. Like, I got this, like, you know, $400,000 project, and I knew we were going to have to rent a couple of vehicles because I just don't have a fleet of vehicles. But I also knew that my Toyota Prius probably wasn't going to cut it in China Lake,
right?
Naval Weapons Center. So I bought brand new Toyota Tacoma. And in fact, the way that I did it is I messaged the person who's the dealer at the Toyota place where we actually got the Prius a while back. I messaged her on Facebook and I was like, I want a Tacoma. I want it to be this color and I want to have all these options. And I was like, let me know when you've got it on the lot. Wow. And so they like sent a vehicle out for me. They actually came and picked me up in the Tacoma and then brought me back to the dealership. And then I bought it. It was all pretty much cut and dry. But you know, the thing is, I bought that for CRM. And when we're going to talk about vehicles, yeah. I mean, I got some desert pinstriping on that. No problem. I had a crew member driving it and smashed into another car in the parking lot and busted out the taillight. You know, things like that happen, but it's okay. That truck is still a beast. And I still sold it for $22,000 with 115,000 miles on it as a 6-year-old vehicle, which is not that bad.
No, so. It's a happy story. That's a happy story in a world of pain.
Yes.
I would also like just to say, like, I completely agree with Chris's, when you buy new, you're not buying other people's problems, which is a good thing. I think something we should raise, though, is it's a bit higher risk in that, like, so, you know, if you're buying new, I don't know, Chris, maybe CRM has been very good to you, but, like, you know, a nice new truck, you know, obviously you were able to do that for a project and you had the money, but for your average tech or whatever, you're probably going to have to do some sort of financing.
Sure.
So, and
well,
if you
finance that.
Yeah. And if you do, then you're, it's fairly risky for the first couple of years, because essentially, potentially you could owe more money than what you would ever get back. If, you know, if you're able to run it for years and years, you're going to make that money back, or you hit that point. But I think buying new, people should be aware that it's a bit higher risk, because if for some reason, I don't know, you change jobs or, you know, you need to sell that vehicle or something goes wrong and you need to sell it, you could be selling underwater where you'll owe more money on it than you'll ever be able to sell it for. So yeah. I think it's something that people should be aware of when you're buying new, is you're not buying other people's problems, but you are. The trade-off is if you are forced to sell it within a couple of years, you could be in some financial trouble right there. On top of what I'm assuming is if you're having to sell it early, you're probably in financial trouble anyways.
Okay. Well, I think with that, let's take another break and then we'll come back and actually talk about cars in segment
Sounds
three.
Good.
Back in a minute.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. We are back with Sierra Mark 248. We're talking about cars. Doug had to leave us because he has kids and responsibilities and things like that. So he won't be on this segment. But anyway, Heather, I got a really quick question for you while we're talking about these vehicles. You know, we've been focusing a lot on field techs, and sometimes you are asked to, you know, use your own car to get somewhere. And in those cases, you're able to often charge mileage, you know, for mm-hmm. that back to the company. And usually it's like at a federal mileage rate or something like that. Yeah. Something that's been I've been curious about as we've looked at like vehicles like the Ford Lightning and all electric trucks coming out. Is there a different federal mileage rate for electric vehicles since you're not actually paying for gas? And maybe you're even charging it at the company's, you know, headquarters and things like that?
So I promised you a quick answer, and here's my answer. I have no idea. That's a really good question.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. You know what? It's never come up. So I'm going to look into that. I'm very curious. And then maybe I can give you the information. You can put it in the show notes or something. So I'll get an answer for you.
I would say if you're in a situation like a long-term situation where you are asked to be using your own vehicle and you're in the market for a new vehicle, maybe electric and or hybrid is the way to go, because if you're getting the standard federal mileage rate, you could be saving and if not making some money because you're not spending as much on gas.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you just like a preliminary just from from my logic.
Yeah.
You know, the federal mileage rate is not meant to pay for gas necessarily. Only, right? Mm-hmm. It's to pay for gas, yes, but it's also the wear and tear on your vehicle. It's insurance. It's everything, all encompassing. So that's the mileage rate went up, just went up actually a month ago. Mm-hmm. So to account for, all the gas, the increase in gas, it still doesn't cover you. So if you're doing mileage right now, and I would just say, if you're offered from a used to be you think you're making a little bit of money. Not really. If you only take into account that you're paying for your gas with that mileage rate, it's mm-hmm. not true. If you look at the wear and tear on your car. So sure. when you, I would definitely have a caution to those that now you're making even less money if you want to look at it just from a gas perspective now because of the prices of gas. But on top of that, if your company gives you a choice between them giving you a truck for a project and you using your own car, hands down, I'd take the truck.
Totally.
Hands down. Yeah.
Yeah. Every
You're
time.
You're not making money on it.
All right. Well, let's talk about some actual vehicles, Andrew. And okay. I think by the end of this segment, we'll have the other host think about this. I want your number one, blank check field vehicle. Like
oh, the top.
Cost
yeah.
is no issue. We'll do that at the end.
You didn't tell me that. If money's no issue, seriously?
At the end.
Because the company is writing the check. So, you're not.
All right.
That's right.
So, yeah. so right. my kind of pick for, kind of low tier, we don't have much money. We're gonna buy a field vehicle. First, I am actually not a fan of electric or hybrid, even though I love the environment. It's super important. But at this point, how are you gonna plug in your car in Yuma, Arizona, at 7 at night? Like you're just not. Yep. The infrastructure's not there. Unfortunately, I wish it was. So instead, what I would do is buy a full gas old school car with the best mileage possible. One of my faves, I would buy an old Nissan Xterra that's stick shift four cylinder. I love stick shift for field vehicles. So much better than automatic, and those transmissions last much longer. Or low end, I would just get a car, literally. I mean, an Toyota old Honda Accord.
Toyota Camry. Honda Accord. Invincible, basically.
Right. And it's like, again, you will start in the morning where all the losers with their old 4x4s that have broken down are sitting in the parking lot. I've seen that again and again and one more time. So I would go with older Japanese sedan. Again, your Hondas, your Toyotas of the world. Those are great. So those are kind of my two picks. Old Japanese sedan, or if you want to be all 4x4 about it, older Nissan stick shift four cylinder Xterra.
So you're talking you're talking about vehicles that people, tax buying.
Yes. This is you're buying your own vehicle.
No limits. Okay. If you're buying your own vehicle, you have real limits. I'd agree. However, I would say my favorite pick is like an old 10 or 15 year old Toyota Sienna, because you've got tons of room. It's also pretty economical. It's going to be older. It's designed for children. And it has all the space to put all the gear in, plus all the people. And one that's 10 years old or so, you're also going to get the DVD player so that you can, watch, you can plug in your phone or whatever and watch TV in the back. It's got a whole TV set up in there. The only thing you have to worry about the minivans is that they're a heavy vehicle on car tires. They eat tires. But if you don't really need to worry about it, that thing is so comfortable. Like if you're in the desert and you need to sit in that thing for a few hours for lunch or whatever, you want to do notes, you get there early, it rains, everybody can get in there and there's no real problems whatsoever. And it's not an SUV, so there's not people clamoring to that third seat in the back, which is just basically a trick, right? And it gets way better gas mileage. So I'd throw that out there too.
Oh, I think that's an excellent choice, by the way. Just a killer choice.
And I'm not going to give you guys are already covering it, but I would say just from an experience, from my own personal experience, I had a Toyota Echo. It was my first field vehicle. Nobody would think that that would be a good field vehicle. It was the best, probably one of the best I've ever had, even right. with companies buying stuff, which is really funny. It's like a small little, I drove that thing to just under 300,000 miles.
Wow.
Went on like, and it was a stick shift. And mm-hmm. So if you have a stick shift, even with a non-truck vehicle, low vehicle, you can actually get up with good tires. You can yep. get up some pretty good inclines if you know yeah. how to use stick shift. So stick
true.
Shift is key. And so I'm bringing that example up because it just shows you, you don't have to go out and say, oh, I have to buy a car for specifically to be a field tech. It's not necessarily right. true.
Not at all.
So if you already have a car, look at what you have and see if that works. You know, how do you improve the vehicle you have? Make sure you have good tires. Put the money in the good tires. And when you're buying a vehicle, make sure it doesn't require, except for trucks, obviously, but kind of look at the type of tires. Again, you're going to need a gearhead, mm-hmm. like somebody like Andrew to come with right. you, but yeah. make sure it doesn't yeah. have weird tires on it. They're going to be really expensive because you will go through tires and companies yeah. will not reimburse you for it. So also when you buy tires, get the insurance on them.
yeah.
Totally worth it. Absolutely 100% worth it when you're in the field because you're picking up nails, even in an urban environment, you're going to yeah. be puncturing your tires. It's the best investment you can make.
Yeah. And also I'm glad you said something about that. Having a real tire too, instead of the new inflator or whatever things like.
Totally.
You just have to put it in the trunk, like put a real tire in there because you will get flats doing archaeology.
Yeah.
Tires are key.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm like crying because both of those examples were so good. Thank you guys.
yeah.
Bill and Heather, I'm like,
and so right. Yeah, I want to mention too, you know, like when my wife and I first decided to kind of head west from the southeast, and we sold both of our smaller cars because back there, you know, we didn't really need a field vehicle, so to speak. We would go to the office and we would take the company trucks to go out for the week. You know, it was all Monday through Friday out there that you were off, and then you'd come back for the weekend typically, because a lot of things are just closer in the southeast. And out here in the west though, and we knew we were coming out west, and we knew we didn't want two vehicles, you know, once we, you know, got together. So we sold both of our vehicles. We actually leased a Toyota 4Runner, a brand new Toyota 4Runner. And the reason mm-hmm. we leased it was because, well, first off, the reason we got a 4Runner, high clearance, so we know we could go pretty much anywhere without modifying yeah. it. We could lay the seats down flat, which is a nice Toyota feature that most of them have. I don't know if every Toyota has that feature, but our Tacoma I had later did that. The 4Runner did that. So you could even like sleep in the back of the 4Runner pretty easily if you needed to. But we fit all of our stuff back there because we got rid of our apartment, literally moved everything into the 4Runner and lived out of that for about a year and a half while we were shovel bumming across the United States to get to the West. And yep. So we had everything in there, and we leased it because it was 2007-08 when the gas prices went over $4 for the first time, and mm-hmm. they were predicted to hit like $8. They never did, but I think we hit as high as like $5, $6. So I was like, well, I don't want to have to sell this when we get to the West and maybe we get something different and have gas prices be so high and trying to sell a vehicle that gets 18 miles to the gallon. So right. that's not like something I wanted to do. So we leased it which ended up being a pretty good deal for us. Real quick deal on leases. If you do get a lease, we went way over our mileage, and they say you get charged so much per mile. But here's a dirty little secret that Toyota doesn't tell you. And I don't know if other companies are the same, but we rolled that lease into the purchase of our Prius when we got here in Reno. And because we rolled it into the purchase of a new Toyota, all the mileage, any damage, because we scraped the shit out of the inside of that 4Runner with all mm-hmm. of our stuff, all of that was wiped out. Didn't get charged for a single bit of it.
Didn't get charged for a single bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So if we'd walked away and bought something else from another dealership, we'd have been charged for all of that.
Yep. That's pretty sweet to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they're still doing that.
When are we going to get to the, like, all right, I guess I'm just going to kick it off.
Yeah,
do it. So the vehicle, the number one vehicle that just, if you're a company, if you can afford it, if whatever, and you're just going to do archaeology forever for archaeology, if you can afford it, is an F-150 because it will last forever. It is super generic. There's a million places that can work on them. A full-size truck like that can hold all your stuff in the back. And like I said, afford it. gas is horrible on an F-150, man. It's going to cost a lot of money to get from place to place. But you seriously, in the field, like the companies that I work for, when they got the Silverados, those things were rubbish. If they ever tried to get something smaller, like a small truck that I like, you know, what I have, it doesn't actually hold all the gear in it. So those things suck. And there's not enough space for people to get in. I'm 6'5", by the way. So, you know, for me getting in the back, like it pretty much has to be Silverado or Sierra or something like that. Otherwise, my legs can't fit in.
Yeah.
But if there was no limit, if money was no limit, of course, like one of the ruggedized Mercedes Sprinter vans, like with solar and all that stuff, there's no way that can, you know, that thing to me seems like it's like 21st century, like safari, like you're way out there, you know what I'm saying? Like way out in the, you know, jungle or desert or something like that. You can just basically subsist. And if you like to geek out, you know, and watch those van life things, like see what people who are crazy and just spending their money on stuff that is not really functional, see what they do to those Mercedes Sprinter vans. Like it's crazy. Right. They've got like bunk beds, man, sofas, like Xbox, like everything in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you basically have like some kind of James Bond field vehicle, but of course, you know, it's, you know, $100,000. Companies aren't going to do that. I don't think you should do it at all either, but you know, that's my money's no limit field vehicle.
Nice.
That's awesome. All right, I'll go next. First, I just a short story. My very first field vehicle was a 1972 Volvo 142 sedan, and it was awesome. Just the square boxy sedan, right? Two-door. Oh, it kicked ass. That thing was tough. Second, my current field vehicle is a 1991 Isuzu Trooper, the last of the boxy ones, which I love and adore. Stick shift, you know, like we were saying before, base model. But if money was no option,
how many years have you had that, Andrew?
I've had it since 2005, and I bought it used. I bought it used for $2,000.
Had one of those things. They're invincible. They rule.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. So I would actually recommend an older, maybe a through 97 Isuzu Trooper, but they're pretty old. Anyway, money's no option. Two things. First, Bill's choice of the Ford F-150, I would just concur, is excellent, especially if you're out in the West. You know, those areas like in New Mexico, Arizona, you got a ton of like highway miles. They're so good for that as well. But money's no option. Honestly, I would buy a base model Toyota 4Runner with stick shift. Yeah, stick shift.
Engine. Andrew. Yeah, you're that person that says, if you won the lottery, what would you do? I would invest it all into high yield stocks and bonds.
I need peanut butter and jelly, but I'd up the peanut butter quality. You're like, come on.
Because peanut butter and jelly butter. So I am that guy, but you know, I could say something. I know that I could be like, oh, I'd like a Porsche Cayenne. I totally wouldn't. Boy. Those vehicles are stupid. You know, a Toyota 4Runner is like the king of the hill. Okay. It is. It's the best one.
I've got one. Mm-hmm. I've got mine for, like, would love this, a Raptor. I'll tell you those are amazing. I actually didn't even know they existed because I'm not like Andrew. Right. I mean, I know trucks only because of this business, right? But and because, you know, purchase them and stuff, or we'll lease them. So we have a client that we were, it's an agency client, and we went out and I drove up, and I have a nice truck, brand new, like 2021 Chevy Colorado with the cab and the you know, containers and everything. And I have a rack on it. You know, my company is nice enough. I got to tell them these are the things that I would like to see. And I pull up and I'm like, I'm proud of my truck. And then the client's like, oh, we're going to go in our truck. I'm like, I'm fine with us going in my truck. They're like, no, we're going to go in our truck. And I was like, okay. So up pulls this big, beautiful red Raptor with everything on it. And the person driving it is tiny, this cute little girl. A woman, tough as nails though. She's firewoman. Mm-hmm. And basically I live in Santa Barbara. After the Montecito mud debris flow, whatever, there was celebrities that were pumping, you know, trying to give gifts to fire departments. And a celebrity gave the Raptor to the fire department and wanted this specific person to drive it. But anyway, so we got to drive. And she said she had a Chevy Colorado too. And she loved that thing. Or no, it was a Ford F-150. Mm-hmm. It was. And she loved that thing. And she did not want to give that up, even though they were going to give her this. But as soon as she got in it, and then she had to, you know, sometimes they have to sleep in the trucks. That thing is unbelievably huge. We fit four people in the back seat with lots of room, and they weren't small people. And then it has everything. It has like a TV. It's like a little mini RV, that thing. So that would be my number one. If I had money's no object, I'd want the Raptor.
Yeah, those rule.
I'd go with for a mid, whatever, like realistic Toyota Tacoma. We have one that's like 20 years old. I shouldn't say 20, maybe 15 years old. And that thing will go anywhere. It is. And it's amazing. So that would be my top pick.
I'm just too tall for the Tacoma. If you're tall, the Tacoma's not going to work. Your legs are too long.
I'm 6'1". And even for me, it's on the edge. Yeah.
I mean, I'm 6'1", and my Tacoma was, I liked my Tacoma. It was a 2015. I was very comfortable inside of there. I never sat in the back seat, so I don't know about that.
That's the thing. Nobody ever sat in the back because you were 6'1".
Yeah.
Yeah, and dude, and my Trooper, the Trooper, dude, I can wear like a top hat and it's fine. It's awesome.
It's the SUV where it's completely open in the back and you could put the back seats back. That seems to have room, although I'm not 6'5", but it does seem to have more room than the average truck in the back seat to me. But again, I'm not 6'5", so.
Right. Let me give my my picks and then we'll end this show. So I would have to say, again, just as an all-around off-the-shelf field vehicle that you don't have to do anything to, I have to go with the Tacoma as well. Just because it's got a super high clearance. I don't know how many field vehicles I've been in that hit something in the middle because the people are driving down a two-track and they don't realize how high the middle of the two-track is. And there's just like a boulder that hits the transmission or something like that. And it's just like, oh my God. So, the Tacoma is naturally just higher without doing anything to it. And not only is it higher, but it's narrower than, say, bigger trucks like a Tundra or an F-150 or something like that. Bill thinks that I'm going to pick the Rivian or something like that in the comments. Here that we have. However, I am realistic, and I know that
cactus out there.
I put my $100 deposit down on the Tesla Cybertruck a week after you were able to. So Elon Musk has had my $100 for 4 years. So listen, but here's the thing. I know I'm a realistic, and I know that a fully electric truck, while I love like the Ford Lightning, the F-150, the Lightning version, all that stuff, it's just not realistic yet because the range isn't there to get you out and back. I've been in so many situations where you're putting on, 200 plus miles a day, and that's just not comfortable place to be in, right? When you're getting back to the hotel room and you've got 20 miles of charge left, right? Like it just doesn't feel great. So, but I do think hybrid is the way to go. I don't think there's any reason not to get a hybrid, especially in 2023, especially in 2024. Nearly every major manufacturer is coming out with something that's at least a hybrid. And I think you're almost being irresponsible not getting that. That being said, for my pick, and you guys aren't even going to know what hit you if you haven't seen these before, it's in the comments and it'll be in the show notes. But for my pick for field techs, if you've got $300,000,
I know this one.
Earth Roamer. So the Earth Roamer.
Yeah.
The Earth Roamer is real. It's basically built on a Ford, I think an F-350 chassis and bigger. Gosh. And it is luxury like truck topper camping. It's not even a topper. It's built into the vehicle. It's high clearance. It'll literally go anywhere. But try to find one for under $200,000.
Everybody looks this up. This is cool. Looks like a tank.
If you look it up, it seriously is like a fire station, command center. It's like you see in the forest. It's like the command center for all the forest firefighters.
Oh, I want this.
Well, We were in the Craters of the Moon National Park this last week. We were in Craters of the Moon National Park this last week, and we're in the campground. Now, the campground is only like $20 a night, right? Because it's a national forest or national park. And an earth roamer comes in, and I'm like, dude, you could be actually out on the lava fields. What are you doing here? Why are you even in a campground? I totally judged him for it.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this thing is like nicer than the apartments I stayed in before in the past. Like, what is this?
I know.
Crazy. Yeah, it's got speaking, countertops, man.
I know. Speaking realistically, though, I do think if you're going to be I don't want to say a true shovel bum, but if you really are traveling around, you don't have a home base, and especially if you're doing some out west like camping jobs and stuff like that, I do think a pretty robust truck, like, I mean, something at least an F-150 or higher, and a camper topper, because you can get some really good toppers these days, a camper, like a real camper that you can stay in. I think it's a good idea, because even if you have to take it into some rugged areas, you can relatively easily just take that camper off, just put the legs down and pull the truck out and then leave it somewhere, you know, and then go out and do stuff. So I think it's good for people traveling around.
This was one thing I just wanted to add on to the end of this, is that if you are going to get a truck, you really should have a cover on it, like a cab on it, or if it's your, because why you're going to go, let's say you're going to go to a hotel, you're going to have everything in the back of the truck, and now you're going to have to load everything into the hotel room.
Absolutely.
That's like the best investment you can make, is something that is lockable. Like, if you can't have a full cab on it, but have a cover, but it's got to be secure so that people can't break in. So
you had a shell, you had a shell on your Tacoma, right, Chris? Cause I have a 2019 Ford Ranger, and I have a shell on it.
Yep. I got my shell by almost backing into a dude at a Starbucks because he ran behind my truck, and I saw him in the camera and the tailgate, and he's like, hey, I just crashed my Tacoma, it's been totaled, but the camper shell is perfectly fine, do you want it? And he sold it to me for $800, and it was like a $2,500 shell.
Wow, sweet.
And so I was like, hell yeah, I'll take that. It fit just fine. But
I totally agree.
Let's have our audience's picks for vehicles. If you want to send us something through our contact information on the show notes, there's some Twitter handles there. There's some email addresses. You can just do chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com, or hit us up if you're actually listening to this episode on Archaeo Field Text before you go and comment on it. If somebody posts it, I might post it if I want, because I'm curious on feedback. If you're actually listening to this, put in the comments your favorite field vehicles. You know, what are your picks? And I'd like to know your money is no object picks, because those
are also really, what's the craziest field vehicle you've ever seen? What's the craziest? I want to know crazy.
Totally. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks a lot. This has been a fun episode to do. And again, send us your picks, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Nope. No, not yet, Doug. All right. That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRM Arc Podcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website, or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Thanks, everyone, for joining me this week. Thanks also to the listeners for tuning in. We'll see you in the field. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
See you guys next time.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.